Welcome, Aspiration Athletes. This is another edition of our podcast here, going live on Twitch, and will be posted after we do the post-production. But I want to welcome those of you that are listening in, starting to come in from Facebook. So this is episode 20, and we're talking about strategies to improve your athletic performance. So maybe you're a coach, maybe you're an athlete, but you're looking to improve your athleticism. You know, what are some strategies, some tips, some ways that we can go about our training and structure our training efficiently so that we can improve our athleticism in either ourselves or our athletes? And then later on in the show, I'll be talking about my top 10 picks for exercises of, again, improving athletic performance. So stay tuned for that. I'll be talking about and going in depth about those exercises and why I chose those on the list. but first things first, this is the first show I've done in about a week and a half, maybe 2 weeks now. And I got on a consistent basis of making a podcast at least once a week. Things have been pretty busy, so I want to just apologize to the loyal listeners who have been tuning into the show consistently and supporting our efforts here at Aspiration Athletics. Additionally, we are running listener support on Anchor. So, you know, keep a lookout if you're following us on, you know, Spotify or Anchor. We do have listener support now. So if you enjoy the show and you find that there's valuable information, you know, pay what it's worth. Donate what you think it's worth to listen to the show, or don't. But simply listening and using this in your daily routine, or maybe even helping other personal trainers and coaches alike with their exercise prescription, whether we're addressing lifestyle population and demographics or athletic demographics. So I want to go into, you know, what pillars or modalities of training, so to speak, are the base and foundation that are going to essentially attribute towards improving athleticism and athletic performance. So the biggest things to remember and the most foundational pieces are going to be starting with, and this is in no particular order because they all work in conjunction, you want to have speed. You know, when we're talking about athletics and we're talking about specialization in sport, especially as you followed the athlete development model, you know, if you're looking at specialization in sport, depending on the sport, and because most sports require this, speed is an attribute that we need to definitely keep in mind in our training efforts. Moving forward, power is another, again, foundational piece that we need to consider when developing a training program for our athlete or individual. Now, this one, contrary to popular belief, I'm going to say flexibility. I think flexibility and mobility in general is widely, widely underrecognized, and I think we're getting better as we move forward and finding more information regarding myofascial release techniques and properly warming and stretching the body. You know, we're seeing benefits over time in those studies, and I think that being flexible and having the mobility pays dividends in not only, you know, the comfortability of your exercises, but improving your blood flow to your musculature. That is huge. People underestimate what flexibility is really for. Not only is it going to improve your lifts and help you feel more comfortable, especially if you're in a squat, right, and you're sitting in the hole, which is the bottom of that squat pattern, that's going to be tough, you know, and if you don't have the mobility and flexibility, it's going to be a lot harder on yourself. So I think, for sure, flexibility is a foundational aspect that we need to consider. And then lastly, you know, our core strength. And our core strength is one of these, at least from what I've experienced in my time as coach and personal trainer alike, is core is usually thought of in a couple of different ways. You got bodybuilders that do just a ton of isolation work, right, for that aesthetic appeal of shaping the core musculature. But then there's like functional ways of training your core. And I think that training your core in general is a great place to start. And that's not me knocking any bodybuilders out there. I just think that we can have a wider variety and a better selection of core exercises that are going to attribute to better functional strength and crossover and translation into sport. So what does that mean? I'm talking lots of thoracic rotation, you know, we're again talking about mobility and flexibility, right? Being able to move in a transverse plane via rotational aspects of the spine is essential for any athlete. And I would again argue any athlete. So whether you're a football player, whether you're a tennis player or a baseball player, having core strength is a foundational piece to your training efforts. Now, you heard me say functional strength. What exactly does that mean? Functional strength is, in layman's terms, the ability to move throughout daily life easily or with ease, and to have all of these general movement patterns down to a T, and where we're executing with good form. You know, these functional movement patterns are done in, you know, multiple planes. Maybe they're dynamic. You know, functional movement is being able to move freely. It's being able to move without pain. It's being able to, you know, move without any sort of impingement on the joints. And I think CrossFit, as much as I love some of the derivatives of the sport being the exercise modalities and training modalities that they incorporate within it, I think that that has encompassed the term functional strength. However, there's a lot of athletes and coaches that are executing with poor form. So functional strength is to me being able to, you know, execute daily tasks, right, with ease, and having that ability to stand up out of a chair with good form, or, you know, reach overhead and change a light bulb, or, you know, in this case, functional strength being that we can translate that that ability to move properly and within many different planes in sport. So, you know, diving into our first foundational piece of speed, you know, when we're talking about developing an athlete, again, going into most athletes need this attribute. So we need to develop their speed, and we need to understand that there's going to be exercises that are going to be more tailored towards speed production. And, you know, I want to name off a few exercises that I've used with my athletes and have had success with, as well as myself, throughout my years of, you know, being involved in sport and competition in my youth. So for speed, we have resistive sprints. I think that, you know, whether you're taking a sled, or you're pushing that sled, or you have some sort of bungee cord wrapped around your waist that's adding resistance as you run, you know, these type of exercises like speed parachutes and like I said, sled sprints, weighted vests, and incline movements, you know, working against resistance is going to develop your speed as a result of training these aspects of power. So speed and power go kind of hand in hand, and you'll find that here soon as I move along the list. We also want to look into assistive sprints. So if you're thinking about athletes that, much like football players, right? You know, this is working on downhill type of movements, this aspect of shorter bursts of energy. So you're really working that ATP-PC system. And then we have acceleration drills. So acceleration drills, if we're looking at kind of reaction type of sports, so that would be football, right? Having to react off of that whistle. Wrestling, that's another big one that I think a lot of people underestimate, kind of the need for speed, so to speak, in that sport. You need to be able to react. So I think that acceleration drills can look something like, for, you know, maybe a field athlete like football or, you know, lacrosse. These acceleration drills are doing sprints in the form of like a free fall. So I don't know if anyone's ever heard the term of a falling sprint, but I like to use this exercise to develop that reaction time, because your body's not going to let itself hit the ground. So of course you're going to end up stepping out and making a powerful step to maintain your upright posture. I really like that one because it trains your reaction time on your own will rather than training to a whistle. So that's a really good one, and I think that ultimately too, you need to have those acceleration drills that incorporate a whistle or something that's going to kind of cue the start of a play or maybe the start of the match, like something that you can work to, again, build your reaction time. So we have those acceleration drills, and going off of that, there's another one called a kick up start, and I really like this movement. I like to use this one to train the ability to hit the ground and produce power. So if we're talking about planting and reaction time, our athletes' feet are going to be foundational. So when I'm talking about this movement, I'm talking about this exercise, I want you to start thinking, especially my other professionals out there, maybe you're just an individual listening in, you want to make sure that your ankles are rolled out. So lots of dorsiflexion, plantar flexion, maybe with resistance bands, inversion, eversion, you know, working to work that ankle out in all of its many different movement patterns and planes so that we can have the loose musculature around the ankle and foot to be able to handle these type of dynamic movements within the joint. So being loose and limber before starting any of these exercises is absolutely imperative for the essentially the performance of all of these exercises. So moving forward, you know, that being said, that's going to be kind of this unwritten rule that you need to warm up, folks, before you get moving. And that's just what it comes down to. But these, going back to our acceleration drills, these kick up starts, imagine getting into your 40-yard dash setup. So my football players, you know what that looks like. Your 40-yard dash setup, you take that sprint position, you're going to kick your feet up, and as soon as your feet plant toward the floor and touch the floor, you're powering through and planting off of your foot and sprinting. And again, that's training the reaction time of our acceleration. So there's also top-end speed training. So I really like this aspect of training. The benefits are, you know, improving our running speed and our max top end speed. That's going to inherently be increased as a result of, you know, better energy economy and oxygen economy. So you're going to be more efficient at using less energy and working at those higher and intense speeds. So this aspect of running economy being improved as a result of these top-end speed trainings being able to work within that, you know, very high-intense range of exercise intensity. So with that too, you're certainly going to be improving your neuromuscular coordination. So thinking about how those pathways that communicate between your brain and muscles, you know, we're generating more proprioception, we're generating more of this coordination in body awareness, along with essentially this better fuel economy in the form of your oxygen uptake, right? So this whole aspect of improving endurance and how it trains your cardiovascular output, same can be said for our speed and training our speed. And you'll find that how we train certain aspects of these modalities, whether it's speed, power, flexibility, or core strength, you know, they're going to be done in this fashion where we are becoming more body aware. And that's ultimately where this intensity is helping us to improve our economy within this oxygen uptake, because our body is working at such a high intensity and getting used to working at that top end speed that now it has to accommodate by uptaking less oxygen, basically doing more with less, right? That's the whole idea of improving the running economy there. Now, the same can be said for muscle, right? So thinking about how we train our athletes in their athletic and musculature development, you know, your body adapts to the stimuli that's placed on it. So if you're placing heavy loads on your athlete, inevitably they're going to have joint pain, but in the short term, they're going to produce strength, right? But at some point, we want strength to meet power, and we want power to meet speed. So that's why I'm going to go right into our next aspect of performance and increasing athlete performance, which is power. And sports performance lifts that I am certified in as a coach exemplify the explosive movement patterns that essentially every athlete wants to have. I mean, every athlete needs to be reactive, every athlete needs to be explosive, and every athlete needs to be powerful and commit to their movements and be efficient with their running and their oxygen uptake. So, you know, thinking about all of these things as I go through them, you start to realize that they all work in conjunction with each other to produce a elite athlete. So moving forward, let's talk about some exercises that attribute to power. So I really like this first one because it produces the most motor unit recruitment throughout the body, and that is our snatch grip deadlift. So if any of you have ever done a deadlift, maybe you've been in powerlifting, maybe you've hung out with some of your gym bros and they're like so insistent on you doing a deadlift. I remember the first time I did deadlifts, it was in high school, and we started, oh my gosh, in just these awful positions, you guys. It was terrible. The football coaches at the time were negligent when it came to exercise, and we just had these just off-the-wall coaches that were balls to the wall in their work ethic, but they had no idea how to, you know, preserve form throughout movement patterns. And even at that time, as a freshman, I was thinking to myself, like, I know my low back should not hurt the way it does doing deadlifts. So, you know, getting back to the point anyway, I went off on a tangent there, but when, first of all, coaches, this is why I'm talking about this. Let me first say that. This is why we're having this discussion, because it's not just a trainer's job. Like, of course, I'm here to help athletes improve their performance, but as a coach, you're the first line of defense. Now, of course, I want you to, much like myself, I have to stay within my scope of practice and stay in my lane. You know, I want coaches to do the same thing, but also to use resources like I'm providing to be able to shed light on how their athletes can improve their performance, whether it's referring them to myself or referring them to my content to be able to, you know, see these movement patterns and see how they're conducted safely and efficiently to improve athletic performance. So that got away from me. Let's get back to the point. Snatch grip deadlifts are great. I love this movement. Again, the most motor unit recruitment throughout the body. So we're talking total tension. And it specifically targets your posterior. And for those of you that aren't sure what posterior means, that's a fancy term for your backside. So everything that makes up your backside, you know, we're getting the most, essentially the most recruitment and isolation through our hamstrings. So we're getting lots of hamstring and glute engagement along with our low back erectors. And for someone that was coming from a point where, you know, I had pretty bad form on a lot of my lifts that were heavy posterior, your deadlifts, your squat motions, even though that's a push, if you don't have the low back strength to support, you're not going to have correct mechanical positions when the load gets heavier. And as a power lifter, I was working with some pretty heavy loads, and I'm just kind of smacking myself across the head now, because I'm looking back, you know, 3-4 years later and thinking to myself, man, I should have known to, you know, pay more attention to my low back erectors and to spend a little more time. And most people want to just do a ton of hyperextensions. And you've seen this often in the gym. You got that one guy in the corner who's doing plated back extensions off of the hyperextension machine. And you're just like, come on, dude. Like, there's certainly more efficient ways to train that rather than doing 100 reps of those a day. Sorry for all my MMA fighters. I know you guys love doing those. Not to throw any shade, but, you know, when we're talking about getting in the gym and especially working with athletes in a group setting, you need to be efficient with your time. And I think that, you know, adding a ton of these isolation exercises is great when you're, you know, not working toward a specific deadline in the form of getting your athlete ready through a yearly training block or training plan to get them ready for their season or their competition. You know, these are all things that we have to consider: our time in the gym, our loads, our intensity, and I'll kind of talk about that more as we move forward here. But snatch grip deadlifts, great first addition to kick us off on the power exercises here. So with that, you know, you have different variations of snatch grip deadlift. You got your regular deadlift, you've got your trap bar deadlift, and all I'm going to say to each of those, because it really is variable amongst the sport and it's variable amongst the athlete that you're training, we could go into all day why each is beneficial for what athlete, but snatch grip deadlift to me is developing the same musculature that you would get from a deadlift. However, we're incorporating more motor units because the effort is a bit more strenuous on the body due to the angles and mechanical positions of the lift. So with that in mind, working down the list here, my next selection for a power movement that's really good is a clean pull. So maybe you've heard of power cleans, maybe you've heard of clean and jerks, maybe you're an Olympic weightlifting fan and, you know, you've heard of these movements. You know, we have a fantastic transfer into sport when it comes to these power movements in the form of Olympic weightlifting movement derivatives. So our clean pull is essentially, again, this Olympic movement, and it's incorporating this aspect of speed, so the bar off the floor, and strength, where the load is being presented to us in the form of a load being pulled off of the floor. So we're having that aspect of a pulling motion, while also a, in a sense, a pushing motion. So if you think about, the lift in the triple extension phase of a power clean, you know, that is where we're hitting the very top of the movement on our clean pull. That clean pull is pulling that bar off the floor, holding from a power position, you know, either at or above the knee, and then powering your hips through in a triple extension and driving those shoulders up towards the ceiling. So we have this aspect of a hinge or a pull movement followed by kind of this isometric, not hold, but just the tension, you know, this time under tension. And as a coach, I preach this aspect of patience on your pull. So when I say patience on my pull, this is usually, let me first clarify, these are designated days that we do these slower eccentric pulls, or maybe slower pulls from a power position, because it is more strenuous in the low back erectors. And this is why I'm saying if you're looking for strength and speed, you're going to do more time under tension. That was the point I was getting at here. So this time under tension is working strength and speed. If we're working speed and strength, you know, we still have a decent load on the bar. Maybe we took some weight off, but now we're going to be seeing how fast we can get that bar in executing the lift or the movement. Because we want to build speed, we want to build power, and both work in conjunction with strength. So these can be, especially explaining the science of it, can be very confusing, because there's a lot of crossover and translation with each of these. So if it sounds like I'm talking about speed, you know, a lot of the times the power and speed are kind of, I don't want to say interchangeably used, but again, there is high amount of transfer within, you know, these given exercises and strategies of implementing them. So you start to question yourself in terms of what we've already talked about here, the intensity, time under tension factors. All of these things should start presenting questions to where you're thinking how you formulate your athlete's program. You know, what do I do moving forward to help my athletes improve? And what I can say before we go on to flexibility is, very simply, black and white. If you're too weak for your speed, so if you find that you're a pretty fast athlete to begin with, right, but you're kind of weak for your speed, so maybe you're like a safety. That's just an example, an analogous example here. Maybe you're a safety and you're not very strong, but your speed is on point. We're going to focus on maximal strength lifting. So this aspect of talking about our speed, strength, strength, speed, you know, these are aspects of intensity. These are aspects of modes of training that we are working to accomplish a certain result. So speed and strength are a single sought after result in a given workload or a given set. Like, that's why we change the repetitions and value according to the athlete, right? So if you're working at 85% intensity or even 90%, right? You're working in that like 90%, like 1 to 2 rep range, like a power lifter. You're going to be working more maximal strength attributes of lifting and developing strength versus speed. So think about the inverse, right? To where you're too slow for your strength. So maybe you're a bigger guy, maybe you're a lineman, and you're pretty strong, but you're not very fast. Now we need to focus on speed strength. You've got the strength part down, right? Not to say that we're going to take a break from strength. That's just not going to be the main focus. And you're inherently going to get stronger, but we need to focus on our speed. So this aspect of speed strength, okay? I talk about speed strength. I talk about maximal strength. I talk about strength speed. These are all different aspects of changing intensity, changing rep ranges, and changing the amount of load on the particular exercise to essentially produce a result of, in this case, for speed strength, developing speed, right? Developing speed with that movement pattern of the performance lift of, let's say, a power clean or a clean pull, rather than have that athlete who is maybe a lineman, you know, he doesn't need to be doing 90% of his max. Yes, he can lift it, but that's only going to make this kid stronger. We want to make him faster. So we're going to have him doing sets of six, sets of eight at 70, 65% intensity, and work on speed. Work on speed. So now that I've gotten that down, and maybe it's still not clear to you, I'll be doing follow-up videos in the post-production process, and also be explaining in the next YouTube video, kind of reiterating this aspect of how we can train athletes to develop power. But improving athletic performance, we're now talking about flexibility. So what does flexibility do for an athlete? What is it going to help them accomplish? Well, if we just consider all of those exercises I just talked about to you previously before getting to this point, our snatch grip deadlifts, our clean pulls, our acceleration drills, our resistive sprints, our assistive sprints, our top-end speed training. Think about doing all of those things, and now you're super tight. Makes everything a lot harder. You feel like you're moving against your own resistance that is your body, you know, and this is an uncomfortable dilemma. So what it comes down to is not only warming up our bodies, but we need to work to stretch our bodies out. Too many of you guys are coming into the gym or going into your training routine, right, out on the football field. Maybe you started practice, you started two-a-days, and you're busting your ass, but you're not stretching, you're not taking 20, 30 minutes to stretch out. You are doing yourself a lot of harm by doing that. You know, we're talking about being able to increase blood flow to those major muscle groups that have been worked and that have been stressed. And blood carries all of these nutrients that we get from eating, that we get from keeping ourselves healthy, hopefully. And you guys are drinking tons of water, because I know that you are. You're good people. But, you know, if we're not improving our circulation in the form of stretching and getting those nutrients to our muscles, we're kind of hindering our own progress, right? So I want you to look at this as being a holistic piece of the puzzle when addressing athletic performances. We've got to get better at stretching. We've got to improve our flexibility. You know, as a wrestler in my time wrestling at a varsity level and at a national level, as a high school athlete and having the chance to work with some of the best athletes in the country, ranging from, you know, Olympic medalists to national champions, All-Americans. You know, I was around some of the best in, again, the country and world, respectively. And these wrestlers, you know, all attributes aside, yes, they were strong, yes, they were fast, but damn, they were flexible. Those guys knew how to move and to bend. And if you've ever watched a college or even a world level wrestling match, you'll notice that if any of those individuals, whether they're on one team or the other, and they go for a takedown, you'll notice that it's never a clean take. Like, there is a lot of resistance, and those a lot of the time those defensive moves that the other opponent is exhibiting, they are in like just crazy pretzeled positions. And speaking on that myself, being in those type of situations, you got to be able to spread your legs or do the splits, rather. You got to be able to do those things. Like, because the sport in and of itself, if you aren't flexible and can't handle certain positions, the individual or your opponent's going to have leverage on you. So I wrestled tons of guys that were stronger than me. And before I knew how to keep my body fit in a way that was going to be conducive for my athletic performance, I was relying on my flexibility and my speed, because I wasn't very strong and I wasn't lifting weights at the time. If I could only go back, folks. But nevertheless, getting back to her point here, flexibility is important. And I want to talk about a couple of movements that, or at least provisions in terms of stretching, that I've learned to incorporate in my routine that really, really helped me. And this aspect of myofascial release, I'm going to go through really quick. Myofascial release is your ability to kind of use physical means of releasing the muscle via a foam roller or via your hand by palpating the area or by a tennis ball, right? Kind of doing strokes over that tight musculature. This is a good way to open up those fibers and again create blood flow to those tighter areas. While doing that, you're also, by creating that friction, opening up the fascia, and you'll be able to further stretch the musculature so that you can continue to increase your flexibility. So now I want to talk about a couple stretches that are going to be good for improving mobility and flexibility. So in my time as a coach and as an instructor, I found that the best stretches that athletes and lifestyle populations alike benefit from is a downward dog to a child's pose transition. And I want to talk about why downward dog is important here. Downward dog is a yoga pose derivative along with child's pose, and they're done in usually a sequence involving a transition where you're going from up to down. So this downward dog, contrary to the name, is the hips toward the ceiling, and you're trying to bring your heels flat to the ground. So what is happening here is we're stretching throughout our entire posterior, targeting our hamstrings and our calves. So if we're thinking about athletes that are way overdeveloped in their anterior anatomy, being where their shoulders are kind of rounded forward, maybe they have a kyphotic posture because of the lack of back engagement, you know, the downward dog is going to be something that we're going to want to work to improve throughout our athletic career so that we can stretch and increase that flexibility and range of overhead motion at the shoulders as well, because we're certainly challenging our ability to protract and retract those shoulders enough to clear and press over our head without impingement at the joint of our shoulders. So the child's pose, we're going to bring those hips down from the ceiling, drop them towards our heels. Now you're lying kind of in a folded position, heels towards your butt, arms are long, and you're feeling this stretch mostly throughout your low back. And I really like this one again because people love it. I mean, it wouldn't ideally be my first choice for a flexibility stretch, but this stretch really kind of covers most of your bases, and I'll even take it one step further. If you take it into a cobra pose, you're going to benefit a lot. That stretch is really deep, and it works to hit all of the major muscle areas, being your posterior, targeting all of our traps and our lats, targeting our hamstrings, glutes, and calves. And then if you take it into cobra pose, you're stretching all of your ab musculature, you're getting a stretch through your your low back as well, and you know, working to stretch a lot of the muscles anteriorly in the chest. So I really like the cobra pose in a transition and working as a sequence with the downward dog to child pose, and then on to the brain fart here. So the downward dog, the child's pose, and then working into the last stretch I said. So moving on to our next aspect of improving athletic performance is core strength. So core is a very undervalued attribute to strength and performance lifts. You know, people think core is just an aesthetic type of muscle. It has a lot of use and a lot of purpose toward our functional strength. So, you know, core strength is not just training, like I was talking about with bodybuilders, not just training one plane of motion or isolating just your rectus abdominis, but, you know, working those transverse abdominals in conjunction with your obliques and, you know, essentially the TVA or the transverse abdominal, being able to brace your core at will is creating that natural belt. And you can think by, you know, improving your and bringing up your core musculature in all of these areas, your transverse abdominals, your obliques, your rectus abdominis, you know, these all act to form that natural belt so you can cinch and stabilize your spine and improve your posture throughout all of your lifts so you can maintain that mechanical advantage. So I want to thank all of you for joining us on Aspiration Athletics' special milestone being our 20th episode. And I want you to stay tuned because there will be a part two coming out very soon where we're addressing the top 10 exercise choices for improved athletic performance. So I'll be running through those and my list of favorites to implement in a training program. So stay tuned for all of that and more, folks, only on Aspiration Athletics Podcast. And we're looking forward to hearing you soon.